the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show. And I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. A slightly shorter show this week, but some great insight into why we all love non-league. FA Vars winner Dave Diper is my guest. Manager at Sholing FC since 1999. Possibly before even some of our listeners were born. Over 1,100 games in charge. He's worn many hats. But at the moment, it is a manager of the side topping Step 4 in the Southern League Division 1 South. In an era when loyalty is almost a forgotten word, his time as gaffer means that all of his coaching staff and many of his playing squad have notched up hundreds of appearances each in a Sholing shirt. He appreciates that, and he appreciates it's probably played a big hand in their success as a club as they look to make the next step up into Step 3. Bringing everything together this week for the Non-League Paper is executive editor there at Non-League Paper Towers, Mr. John Couch. Some sad news, re-supporters and clubs, brightened a little with some streaming news, some managerial thumbs up, and what's to come in this weekend's paper. Slightly reduced in time this week, but plenty to entertain and inform. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's start this week with catching up with an old friend of the show. Back in 2014, he took his club to the FA Vars final at Wembley and brought back the trophy. And in 2018-19 season, he notched up his 1,000th game in charge at the club. And as we speak now in the 2022-2023 season, he's still in the manager's role and seemingly as good as ever and enjoying it as well. Sitting atop of the Southern League Division 1 South, it's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Sholing FC, Mr. Dave Diper. Welcome back, Dave.
How you doing, Tim? All right?
Well, I'm doing well. Topping Step 4, 10 points clear, although I see Tottenham have got two games in hand. Season going to plan, then?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm even surprised slightly myself, really. But the lads are really putting in some good shifts, you know. It's about consistency. In last year, we struggled a little bit with injuries towards the end of the season, and I'm just hoping that's not going to be the same this year. This is we've played 17 games, we've won 14 out of 17, but to be honest with you, you know, we're not getting carried away with it. Obviously, we're still grounded. There's 21 games of football left, and, you know, but we've got to be positive. I mean, I said to the lads, I would have bitten somebody's hand off for the start we've made this year. But, long may it continue.
Yeah, I mean, you say only 17 games, but, I mean, you have scored 40 goals and only conceded 13 in that time, which suggests that you've got things quite right at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, last year we clearly didn't score enough goals. You know, we had Dan Mason up there and we had Stu Green up there. But, Lee Waters come back into the scene this year and although he's been quiet for the last four or five games, he's been prolific in his goals scored this year, and it's helped us out massively. It's about taking the opportunities, and last year we didn't really sort of take them. But this year we seem to be sort of like actually taking the chances when we come across them in the game, and that makes a massive difference. Obviously, we're always decent at the back. We've got a great goalkeeper in Goz, a really good defence. We had the best defensive record in the league last year, but we got it right at the top end of the pitch, and that's what matters.
Yeah, It is about getting that balance, that chemistry right, isn't it? And back in the Vars winning season, I remember much being made then of your side being a band of brothers, not only with a series of relatives in the squad, but also the camaraderie and extended family that feel to the whole side. And I was looking back, you know, knowing that I was going to speak to you, I was looking back at that Vars side. I'm looking back at your side at the moment, and I see Marvin McLean, scorer of the only goal at Wembley, still playing, still scoring, 745 club appearances. Skipper Byron Mason on 667 appearances. Dan Mason on 503. Lee Water, you mentioned there, back up. He's on 490 appearances for the club. Dan Miller, he's only played 427 times for the club. most clubs, they're lucky to boast one or two of these loyal clubmen. You've got a whole five-a-side. What's the magic formula?
Well, it's just consistency and sustainability. I suppose it's about probably something to do with me being manager for so long, really. You know, that provides a stability at the club. Because obviously, you know, the new manager comes in, it's very difficult to sort of like, you know, the transition, you know, from the old side to the new side, so to speak. But yeah, these boys have been brilliant, you know, great servants of the club. And, you know, Bolland's come on to assist me along with Mark Dyer and my son as well, which has been brilliant. You know, so he's getting a taste for management as well, which is really good. But yeah, we're a special club. I mean, I said to lads, anybody that signs for us is, you know, it's like a family. It's a big family, to be honest with you. You know, if somebody drops out, somebody sort of takes their place, etc. But we get on extremely well together. Socially, we're brilliant. So, you know, it's been professional, obviously, in the party season. I mean, obviously, that's been one of the main sort of stalwarts, really, of the way we've progressed over the years is social side, you know. But I said to the lads, obviously, I trust them over the Christmas period, and because we've got some big games at Bashley and we've got Tottenham coming up. So things can change ever so quickly in football, as we all know. But I just said to the lads, just each game that comes along, let's just try and get the 3 points and tick them off as we go.
Yeah, when I speak to new managers on this show, you know, they've come in and they're taking on a new squad, and I normally say to them, you know, there's a lot of value in a long coach trip to help bond a team. I'm guessing with such an extended family, coach trips are a bit like parties for you guys anyway, which is... And then I look at the travel that you've got to do as well in this division, and you're the most easily side in the division, so probably having long coach trips is, you know, and all getting on, all knowing one another, that combination is probably helping you this season to put you up the top of the table.
Yeah, to be honest, up until probably 2 years ago, I was sharing all that at the back of the coach, but I've actually moved up the coach a little bit now, so I'm at the top. but yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, nobody likes travelling, obviously, at the best of times, and it's difficult for all clubs, and, you know, we're no different. But, you know, win or lose, you know, I just say to the lads, you know, just enjoy it, enjoy the trip back, because some of the trips we've been on are ridiculous, obviously, like 3 to 4 hours, and, you know, I know there's other clubs that sort of travel even more than that. But no, you've got to make the most of it, you know. Like I say, win or lose, it, at the end of the day, it's all it is a football match, isn't it?
It is a football match, but there are some long trips. I mean, you say other clubs, you're step four. When I've looked, I think you've got 260-plus mile trips to Tavistock and Biddeford, and then another 7 over 100 miles. I mean, home games must feel like half a day for you.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's, I say, you know, clubs come up into this league and, you know, from a playing point of view, they might be fine. But, you know, the logistic part of travelling sometimes throws a spanner in the works, you know, even to the best run team. But it's something every club's got to deal with, really. And I suppose you've got to accept it to a certain extent. But I think they could do something, you know, with the area. Teams have to travel, you know, especially when games are called off as well. I mean, you know, there is reports of teams travelling for sort of like 4 hours and then finding the game's called off the other end. And you know, something's got to be done about it. You know, I'm not brainy enough for, you know, to sort it out for them, but there's other people higher up that you know, need to get their heads around that and get it sorted.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, again, that's travelling from the ground. And, you know, I know over the years we've discussed as to whether you should move into the ground because you spent so many hours there. But, you know, lads have still probably got an hour's travel, some of them, to get to the ground before they get those games. So it does, you know, when you're shouting at a player as a fan from the side because, you know, maybe he's looking a little bit lethargic, you'd never know the full story as to how long it's taken to get there. What else he's been? What other pressures he's under to get to even play that game?
Yeah, you're dead right, Tim. I mean, obviously the players have got all jobs as well. You know, we're not full time, so obviously everybody has bad days at work, don't they? And sometimes we're getting players, and you can see their frustrations on the pitch. So you know, it's a lot to deal with. You know, you know, when you're a manager of a grassroots team. But, you know, everybody plays for the love of it. And I do say to my players, the main thing is they've got to enjoy their football. And I think we're seeing the best out of our side this year because everybody is now accepted that, you know, we are a good side. I'm not devaluing what we're doing or where we are, et cetera. But, you know, it is through hard work and executing the basics, really, which really taught at an early stage. Any player that comes into the club, everybody likes to beat showmen down this part of the world, you know, because that's the profile of the club winning the FA Bar. So, but it's something, a pressure which you've got to live with when you, you know, when you put that showmen shirt on.
Yeah, and it is great when you when things are going right, everything's, you know, that those passes just seem to slot in. You know, you'll get the luck of the ball, the spin of the ball, but you've created that own luck because of the hard work you put in as well. But when everybody is so close, and as you mentioned, your son Mark is your assistant. He retired on the back of the FA Vars win as a player, and you've also got Barry Mason in there as one of your coaches as well. When you know each other so well, when things are going badly, does that make it difficult as well to be critical of each other?
No, we're honest. You know, one thing I do sort of like stress that when I sign a player on, I deal with players' selection, etc., with honesty, and I say to my players, just be honest. You know, there's a time and place for everything. Obviously, if we get beat, you know, it's not ideal after the game, but. You know, it's about strong personalities, you know. It's about really getting over the point. Is winning is very important. You know, to me, winning is... Now, when you finish your career, it's really... You look back, it's not really even who you play for. It's what you've won. And I think that's very important. And we're trying to instill that into the 16, 17-year-olds coming into the first team now. Because we're promoting youth as well. I'm still managing to give time... game time to youngsters, you know, to use us as a platform to go to our clubs as well. So, yeah, it's all good at the moment. But like I say, it's just, you know, you just got to keep at it, really, and not look too far forward.
Yeah, I mean, that family spirit has always been beyond just the first team too. And you've got, over 20 youth sides wearing the Sholing shirt with pride. You've got the education programmes, you know, you say with some of the players coming through there. You really aren't the little club you used to be or used to be tagged with.
No, that's right. You know, and, we always used to be sort of like brilliant on the field, but not that good off it. But, you know, you say about family, et cetera. You know, my daughter as well is involved. She's the director of the club. And to be honest with you, you know, the last 2 or 3 years off the field is really sort of like down to herself and probably 3 or 4 other directors, which have been brilliant for the club, you know. So it's moving forward. It's not just on the pitch, it's off the pitch, obviously. You know, in season 2014-15, I think it was, we took voluntary relegation because we just couldn't, we couldn't really afford to be in that league at that particular time, you know. So we were better on the field and what we were off, but now it's caught up now. There's some sort of parity between it.
Yeah, and top of the table, promotion surely in your sights. Could the club compete at the next level? The travel's probably not that much different. So if you go, I'd suggest you'd probably be in the Southern League Premier South if that was where you ended up. The infrastructure is another cost. And as you go up, so does the cost for that with it as well. Is the club in that position that they could compete at the next level?
It's very difficult for all clubs at the moment. You know, we're no different financially. It's tough. You know, I had a call this morning, you know, and we were discussing counts, etc. And it's something which you've got to look at very closely, you know. We're in a position to go up, I think, you know, off the field as well. But it's going to be hard work. It's hard work for every non-league club in the moment because all the costs are going up, etc. You know, you can spend a whole programme talking about that. But, you know, it's a fact, you know. But then it comes down to players' wages. You know, it's been realistic with a budget. It's been, you know, when you're sort of like helping to create that budget, you're very mindful that you can't go over it, you know. And so it's all things together, which really makes a grassroots football, you know. Like you say, us being gone from a sort of smallish club to a big club. Yeah, I think we are now. I think we're in that bracket of being big and... like everything else, you know, on the field is very enjoyable, but off the field sometimes is a little bit of a slog.
Yeah, I think like many a smaller club, it's a smaller club, because I think you and I think about our clubs in a similar sort of way. In that you've done pretty much everything at the football club over the years, probably from cleaning toilets to putting goal nets up. What is it now? What, 1,100 matches in charge as manager?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 1,140 odd, something like that. But I mean, I only know that because somebody actually asked it the other day to one of my assistants, and he asked me, and I didn't know. I just, you know, to be honest with you, I'm no different. I just look at every game as a one-off game, basically. You know, things in life, you know, not just on the field, but off the field change ever so quickly. And you know, you just got to be grateful to be where you are at the moment. And, you know, so long may it continue, because, you know, it is enjoyable. I mean, but the game's really based on volunteers. I mean, there's so many volunteers at a club which never get a mention. And I think it's another thing which I keep reminding my players, because without them being along and helping out, I mean, we wouldn't be around, simple as that, you know. But it's like all these things, you know, most clubs, if you look at most clubs, the age of the volunteers are probably in their early 50s, maybe late 50s, early 60s. So it's tough, you know. It is a tough thing to be in control of. But the main thing is, you know, you talk and your communication throughout the club has been really good, all the way through from the gate man to me. So really, it's good. You know, we're in a good place at the moment. But like I say, I'm very mindful. I've been in the game long enough that things can change overnight.
Yeah, and talking about communication, I was looking at your fixtures as well. You know, we mentioned all those away trips you've got. Is the team coach going in for repairs in the new year? Because it looks like you've got a run of 5 home games in January.
Yeah, well, we might be able to sort of get some income now. I mean, that's the trouble, playing all these games away and the coach travel costs and stuff like that. We've had very little income, you know. But, yeah, and I mean, we've got our heads down. I mean, we've got, you know, I mean, we're one of 8 clubs, really. I mean, you've got the Tottenhams, the Wimborne, Frimtown, Bashley, Panworthy, Tavistock and Exmouth are right in there, you know. So, you know, we're looking behind over our shoulder all the time. But, you know, all we can do is get our game right, not really worry about the opposition or who they got to play, etc. Because you can get drawn into that sometimes, you know. Mm. You know, you look at non-league papers and you're looking at games coming up, and sometimes you're looking at their games rather than our own. But, you know, let's get our house in order first. Let's concentrate on our games and just make sure we try and get the 3 points. Yeah. You know, we've got a tough game this week with Amworthy away on a 3G, you know. Most of my guys have been around a long time, and I tell you now, they're not too keen on 3Gs. So, yeah, that's no excuses, by the way. If they beat us, they probably deserve to beat us. But it's just a fact. That's all.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, one of the things, looking ahead to the weekend with the weather and that sort of thing, yeah, maybe if you're on a 3G, you're more guaranteed you're going to get the game. But, you know, as an older head with older knees, I can imagine that a little bit of trepidation on one of those. Yeah, Hanworthy United, again, their first season since promotion. They lost their manager in October to rivals Wimborne Town. They're still in great shape, though. And what they've done, they've also promoted from within. So Dan Cann's in charge there, has kept their charge going and charged for promotion. There doesn't seem to be really a let up in sort of levels of a game. There's not too many big score lines in your division, because I think that there is a certain level across the whole division, across the whole step as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, Hanworthy and Bashley have done tremendously well in our division, you know. And I must admit, you know, I did look at the first couple months fixtures for them, and I thought, you know, they're quite difficult, but they overcome them really well. So, you know, they've done really well. So obviously we'll find that out probably a little bit more over the weekend. But yeah, I mean, they've got they've got good people at the club, you know. They're sort of like similar sort of fashion to us. They're a tight knit sort of group of players and supporters down there. Bashley, like I say, have pushed forward extremely well. I used to know the chairman of Hanworthy quite well, Steve, before he passed on. Bless him. But no, they're both well run clubs, you know. So I'm not really sort of, you know, I was surprised initially because I thought maybe they're going to get found out, especially with the travelling side of it midweek. But they've coped with it extremely well and should be complimented.
Yeah. So you mentioned you're enjoying it at the moment. Do you ever see yourself just going along to watch a game and sitting in the stands?
I don't know. I mean, the biggest problem we've got in the minute is obviously, you know, I'm no different than anything else. I mean, it's got a shelf life. Obviously, I'm still enjoying it, so I'm still giving my best, and I still feel that I'm really sort of contributing to running the club in a proper manner, obviously. So the transition side of it needs to be looked at. I prefer to watch grassroots football rather than, you know, Premier League on TV and stuff, you know. I mean, because you get the real feel for it. I think it's a massive difference, especially now, it's too mechanical, you know, playing through lines backwards, sideways, backwards, forwards, sideways, backwards. You know, it's just, it's a bit of a bore, you know. And I just love grassroots football, really, to be honest with you. You know, I go and watch games, obviously, for the, you know, opposition to see what they're like, etc. And I love it because, I mean, I've been in the game a long time, so everywhere I go, I can't really go disguised, you know. So I have good chats with everybody, you know. There's loads of stories I could tell about non-league football and my experiences. It's really unbelievable, some of it, you know. It's really great, you know. But that's part of it. I think that's part of the fun, you know. Because, you know, without grassroots football, I think, obviously, you know, what is there for people to do, especially in these bad times, you know? So, you know.
You and me both. You and me both, mate. Dave, it's always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. I wish you well for the rest of the season and wish you well at the weekend. And hopefully we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Much obliged, mate. Cheers. Bye.
So let's head on over then to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League Show. Executive editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. In a fairly, you know, sort of quiet week, I guess, for Non-League. We're talking Thursday afternoon, so we don't yet know the result of Gillingham and Dagenham and Redbridge that takes place tonight in the FA Cup second round replay. So that's why we don't make mention of the great performance from the Daggers. But what we can talk about, I guess, is you know, on Monday we had the FA Vars draw out this week. The fourth round were tied the weekend of January the 14th. I think that's when it feels proper serious for all those involved, because you're after Christmas and you can almost see the Wembley floodlights coming on.
That's right, yeah. There's down to the last 32, which is, as you say, it's come pretty quickly. They've been whittled down so fast over the last few weeks, and there's certainly some big name teams still in there. I mean, I'm talking Newport Pagnell, obviously the holders, and Bury AFC are in there, Jersey Bulls are in there. There's some big hitters there, and a few league leaders along the way to teams like Range Park Vale, who are going well in combined counties. So yeah, there's plenty there to whet the appetite, and looking forward to the 14th, because I think there's some big ties in there.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you say about the, you know, number of league leaders in there as well. And when we say, you know, the leagues don't really take formation until Christmas. When you've got clubs that are involved in national competitions, you know, as much as promotion might be the thing that they're after, when you're so close, a few wins away from Wembley in a national competition, you can see why the focus, you know, goes on those competitions. We spoke with Luke Garrard the other week about what he's learned from previous seasons, getting to the FA Cup third round and then their league season dipping off. It'll be interesting to see, you know, the impact of the FA Vars and the FA Trophy as well. You know, these clubs that are doing well in their leagues and also in the competition, as to what impact that then has on the final standings in the leagues across all the steps and across the whole of non-league.
Yes, I think that's right. I think there does come a point during their progression where the priorities change a little bit, and there is a sort of switch in those priorities. You mentioned Luke Garrard. I had a long chat with Will Evans at Bournemouth after their excellent FA Cup win, and I mentioned to him, we'll be a little bit quietly, that you know, the FA Cup probably scuppered their hopes of playoffs last year, because obviously they had such a great FA Cup run, but it affected their league form in the end, sadly, and they just tailed away. But so I asked him if the FA Cup is now a major priority, and with that in mind, and he said yes, it is. He said because they're all still buzzing with the excitement of their win in the last round, and you know, they've got action to the home in the third round, so they've got chances to progress again. And you know, bear in mind, this is a team who played Everton last year, so you know, they were, as I said, they're still buzzing on the on the side of that. And he said to me, he said, the gaffer won't be, you know, now we've got this far. The gaffer wants to keep it going, and the whole squad want to keep it going because they're invested in it now. So I think it's a good example, really, that once you get to the latter stages of a competition, like we're talking about the VARs, you know, there'll be clubs in there now who are probably almost solely focused on the. On the VARs, I'm looking at Hartbury University at Step 6. You know, I mean, what a story that is. You know, I think it's only their first or second year in Step 6 in senior football, and a 7-0 win to get them into the last 32. Then that's wow, what a statement. So you know, I'm guessing VARs will be. Very, very high on their list of priorities. But you know, for a lot of clubs like Jersey and Bury, I'm sure they will take promotion first. But a VARs run and a dream day out at Wembley is, you know, now it's on the horizons. And becoming closer, is still something that they'll be. Relishing.
Yeah. Yeah. I spoke with Dave Diaper earlier on in the show from Scholing, remembering his time at Wembley when they lifted the VARs, and you know how the clubs progressed from there. Yeah, they even took that that demotion because they just couldn't compete at that level once they got that promotion as well. And now they're building back up. Now they're coming back up as a stronger club. But he mentioned it in that conversation that. Every club comes to Scholing now wanting to beat them because they are FA VARs winners in the past.
That's right. Yeah, you give yourself a sort of stigma, really, don't you? You know, there's a few. Thatcham Town, I know, have the same stigma too. You know, that's another club that people want to go to. Thatcham, they've benefited so much from. Their VARs victory. They're obviously now playing in Step 4, like Scholing, and it's having that label on your back now as FA VARs winners. As obviously the same with a trophy, you know, with Hornchurch that we've seen recently as well. It's the same with them in Step 3. I mean, what a fantastic run that was, and you know, all of a sudden, Hornchurch. I don't think it's any coincidence that Hornchurch is sitting pretty at the top of the Isthmian and looking good for promotion this year. And so I wouldn't mind betting that that trophy run played a big part in that.
Yeah, I mean, I said it was a fairly quiet week in relation to non-league news this week, but the big news was really all of a very sad nature. We learnt of the early abandonment last Saturday of the Bromley Yeovil Town National League fixture due to a medical emergency off the field. Despite much hard work by the great medical team at Bromley, we've since learnt that Bromley supporter Keith Hoare unfortunately couldn't be saved. And I think it just made many realise that sometimes the football that brings us all together, the reason that we all know each other, we all get the buzz off of each other, that's actually secondary, and there are other things that are far more important. It was great to see the non-league family coming out in support of everybody affected by what happened last Saturday.
Yeah, very much so. It was obviously a very, very, very sad occasion, one we were made aware of very early. It soon became apparent that it was a very serious matter. You mentioned the football family. I think we reported in our match report. You know, we included a nice statement from the Yeovil players as a whole, basically emphasising that and showing their support. And obviously. Bromley's club statement themselves, obviously devastated, and you only have to look at the messages on their social media from clubs of all levels, reaching out to them and expressing their sympathy and their support. It's great to see. I mean, I believe that there's no stronger bond than there is in non-league football. But you know, this was football league clubs as well, all coming together because, as you say, it was a it was a day where football sort of paled into insignificance, really. And you know, credit to all the medics and the staff at Bromley and Yeovil for their efforts. But unfortunately, just a very, very sad day.
Yeah, a sad day, and a different sadness, of course, different, completely different level. And but we also saw the sad resignation from the Southern League of Harlow Town at the back end of this week. Issues with their 3G pitch that aren't a quick fix, and they're having to pull out.
Yeah, that was a very sad. I must admit, that was a story that had sort of bypassed me, really. It was one that I wasn't really sort of paying much attention to it until I read it this morning, which was very sad. I can only assume that the 3G pitch they laid
I think they've had some issues.
Not good enough, or?
Yeah, I think they've had some issues, and the repairs, they're not going to be something that they could get done in the next couple of weeks. And I think looking at the impact of that, then they'll need a ground share, the costs and all that sort of thing. That the suggestion is that it just wouldn't be able to be done financially and everything like that. But I mean, there's impact across the whole of non-league, not just those in their division. That, you know, they've played, I think, 17 games in their division, which will then, those results effectively, I think, under the rules, become expunged, and they become one of the relegated clubs. But they've also had ground sharers. Cannons Wood of the Eastern Counties, they played at home last weekend at Broxbourne Borough. So, you know, maybe there was sort of a knowledge that there were potential problems on the horizon. But they've also got a reserve team in the Essex Senior Reserve League and a ladies team in the Eastern Regional Division of the Women's Pyramid. I understand that they're also sort of ending their season as well. So I'm not sure what that means long term. The statement seems to suggest and ask for them to be dealt with kindly. So I don't know whether that suggests that we had Merthyr Town sort of during the COVID pandemic when they literally couldn't play any games because of the different restrictions between England and Wales. They were sort of in abeyance, weren't they, for a season, and then allowed back in at the same step when they were able to sort of play their games. I don't know if that's the suggestion, but I mean, I'm looking at it, and it would be lovely to deal with them kindly. But if they were allowed to start back in step four and not with the, you know, demotion by ending their season early, we'd risk any other club having a bad season just looking to freeze their status and give up a Christmas.
Yeah, I think sadly you're right. I think that's sadly it sets a bad precedent for me. I think if you go down the route of expunging results and effectively naming Harlow Town as the relegated team, then unfortunately I think you have to go down that route. As I say, if you're bottom of your league by 10-15 points come March, what's to stop you saying, oh, sorry, we for one reason or another we have to stop our season, but please go kind on us, don't relegate us. I'm not sure it works that way, does it? I don't know. It's all pretty unprecedented. I mean, what I do know is that Harlow are a lovely club and a team, a club who have been around in non-league circles for many years, very very proud club in their area, and as you say, lots of youth teams and reserve teams and women's teams, no doubt, and you know who are all going to be affected by this, and yeah, it's just a huge shame that they have to go down this route. But having said that, at least they're still there. At least there is still a club. At least they will have their opportunity to enjoy happier times again. It's a shame that the 3G and 4G pitches, which so many people highlighted as, you know, the future, hasn't quite worked for them on this occasion. And I just hope that they can get their house in order and and start again afresh. I don't think it'll be at that level, but I might be wrong. Who knows? But I just hope that they can get things going again, and you know, the proud name of Harlow Town can shine again.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that as you say there, you know, we've got lots of clubs professing the wonders of the 3G pitch. I can't remember off the top of my head a club ever resigning because of the state of their pitch, or if it was a grass pitch. You know, there's been some issues where grass pitches haven't been playable when they've gone elsewhere. But you know, it's an interesting one. Maybe one for the quiz questions in years to come. Maybe
yeah.
On the managerial merry-go-round, again a fairly quiet week. Aldershot finally announcing a permanent replacement to Mark Moseley in the form of Ross McNeely. 5 years experience in the academy at the recreation ground, not a big name in non-league, but possibly says similar of the Shots at the moment and their need to steady the ship.
No, that's right. I mean, this is something pretty close to my heart. I've covered Aldershot for many years in my previous guise, and you know, so it's a club I know very well. I'm delighted for Ross personally. I must admit, when they put him in temporary charge alongside Terry Brown after Mark Moseley left, that it was at a time where the club was on a real sort of downward spiral, and they needed someone really to steady the ship, because obviously, you know, this isn't one of the biggest budgets in the league, and the league is only going from strength to strength. So the danger was that Aldershot could be left behind a little bit, and so it was a real tricky time. But you know, 8 games, he's somehow managed to find 5 wins, I think 4 with clean sheets, which has been a huge upturn in form for them. And they've beaten some good sides along the way. You know, long trip to Gateshead on Saturday, coming away with 2-0. They've beaten a very, very good South End side just a couple of weeks ago, a game with a clean sheet. So, you know, these are really good wins. And you have to say, on paper, he deserves his shout. I mean, I spoke to Shahid Azeem, the club chairman. You know, there was lots of talk about new managers coming in, and I think they've had chats with a few potential candidates, but he basically said to me that they keep looking at Ross's record and thinking, well, this guy deserves a shout. This guy, what this guy is doing is great. They're at the highest position they've been for a long, long time. They're just tailing off mid-table, which, you know, for Aldershot is, the last couple of seasons is great. And yeah, I wish him all the very best. I think it's a result really for young up and coming coaches like Ross, you know, who may be working in the academy fields, and you know that they can look to him as a almost like an inspiration to say, well, you know, you can step up, and you know, by using the youth in a club. Ross has introduced a lot of the youth team players into the first team fold this year, so he's given them experience as well, and it just goes to show that if done correctly, it can work. And I think it's great for academy football as a whole. And I wish Ross all the very best, but he knows as well as anyone it's going to be. Going to be very, very tough, because that's the National League is a very unforgiving league, and as I say, he's given himself a very good platform in which to work from.
Yeah,
good luck to him.
And nice to see that continuity as well. And I mean, elsewhere, a legend on the field who's moved into coaching in recent years, stepped in interim off the field, again rewarded with a permanent manager's job. Matt Tubbs down at Bashley, who were going great guns in the Southern League Division One. And also, I see spoke. Last week about Potters Bar Town and Sammy Moore moving on. Lee Prothero stepped up. He's been given the permanent job as well there at Potters Bar Town, and he's brought in Max Mitchell as his assistant, which leaves a vacancy for the top spot at Wellingarn City. But you can see, you know, when, well, again, speaking to Dave Diaper earlier, you know, he's 1,160-odd games, I think he's been there in charge of. And he mentioned, you know, he's got players there that have been with him for 400, 500, 600, 700 games. But that's because he's been there. And when we get managerial moves, we get all this turnover of players as well. And that's never great for continuity of a club.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I think he's the perfect example, isn't he? Been there for a long time. We spoke a few weeks ago about Neil Cuddy and, you know, and the continuity he's had at Folkestone and Victor due to his longevity, which is incredible, really. And, you know, Folkestone have always been, well, for the last few years, they've always been at the top of tables, haven't they? And, you know, they've always been fighting for things. And I genuinely believe it is down to continuity. You mentioned Lee Prothero. I remember watching Lee as a player, and he's a very nice guy too. It's a very, very strange position he's found himself in, isn't he? You know, at Potter's Bar Town, he's gone into a team who are top of the league and flying high. Weren't expected to be there at the start of the season, and all of a sudden he's now got a not a job to revitalise the team, but just to keep things going, which is sort of quite not necessarily as you'd expect for a new manager. And but obviously he's brought in the Welling Garden City boss to come and help him, and he's obviously the experience that he would have gained from that Welling job. And they've giving themselves a platform with which to build on. And good luck to them, and good luck to Matt Tubbs as well. Another player I've seen many times before in the past, and Bash is a club that I know very well. And we wish him all the very best.
Yeah, you mentioned platform there, so you must have known the next thing I was going to talk about, which is the other news of the week, the soft launch this weekend of the National League streaming platform. We learned earlier in the week, I think 15% of the income from sales will go to the league to reinvest in the system, 25% split across all the clubs. There's 72 clubs, aren't there, in the league, I think, across the way there. And then 60% goes to the club that supporter support that they've signed up with, effectively. It'd be interesting to see the take-up. I see the trial of the soft launch, or whatever that we're calling it, is going to be priced £4.75 per game, and from Boxing Day that will be £9.50 a game. Now, I know it has to be affordable, and I know it has to be priced for people to try it, but I'm looking at it and I'm thinking that's half of what some physical entry prices would be without the travel expenses in an economic climate that's difficult. And I do have a nagging concern about some attendances. I'm a gadget boy. I love technology. I've been helping stream sporting events with my other hats on for well over a decade. But I also always have an eye on the greater impact. And I know that we have to move forward, but I'm not comfortable.
Yeah. I very much get your point, especially at this time of year. I'm currently in my flat working from home and absolutely freezing. So I'm thinking, well, if this was a Saturday morning, would I really want to go 10, 20 miles down the road to go and watch my local team, or could I watch it on the telly for £4.75? And I must admit, if you know, it would be a concern that a lot of people would go for the latter option. I do get it, I think. But having said that, I think it's good for the National League. I think it can only be good for National League clubs in the long term. There's been some concerns raised about the distribution of money. Where have you heard that before? In terms of fans and those wanting to watch a different game, as the, you know, so would a Woking fan who wants to watch Wrexham versus Notts County, for example, you know, where would that money go? And you know, and, is it fair that would go to Woking and not Wrexham or Notts County or vice versa? Obviously, you know, the bigger clubs will probably make more than make more than a smaller club. So, yeah, there has been a slight controversy about that. But, again, where do you draw the line? How do you how else do you police it and govern it? But I think obviously, you know, we are in early stages, but it was something that needed to be done, and I think it is a progressive move, and I hope it's I hope it all works out, and hopefully we can all get to watch a little bit more football, and especially when it warms up. But let's focus on trying to get to these matches as much as possible, because nothing beats non-league football, in my opinion, than standing on the terraces and embracing it on the day. But totally share your thoughts. As a progressive move, it's certainly a good one.
Yeah, and you know, I suppose we should applaud the National League in sort of getting this done mid-season as well, and getting, you know, rolling it out, you know, when they're under much attention and focus to do that. So, you know, it's a soft launch, so and there may well be teething problems, and I'm sure they'll get dealt with. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it follows. Yeah, as I say, I love technology. But I love non-league football as well. And in terms of the National League, we do have a near full calendar this weekend. But I'm looking down the fixtures, and my eye is drawn to midweek and Wrexham Chesterfield coming up this week. What a game!
Yeah, what a cracker, isn't it? It's certainly an early Christmas present for those Wrexham fans, who no doubt will turn up in their thousands as they have been. These last few weeks. Chesterfield have been going well, albeit had a little bit of a stutter, didn't they, last at the weekend at FC Halifax, going losing that 1-0. Didn't quite see that one coming. But they've put themselves right in the mix, and Wrexham's failure to beat York with a last-minute goal on Saturday just gives that a little extra spin, doesn't it? And Newt Notts County back on top of the table, and they'll be looking at that game and hoping that'll be a draw, and they can extend their lead a little bit at the top. But at the moment, all the big games are coming thick and fast, and the Christmas period always throws up the odd. The odd surprise. It's derby season, isn't it? So there's no such thing as an easy local derby. So they've all got their own tasks in front of them to overcome. But Wrexham Chesterfield is certainly one of the appetites. Yeah, it's just a shame it's on a Tuesday, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think for the neutral, it would have been a lovely Saturday afternoon game, and we can stick it on the front page and, you know, hoping to get a nice big crowd. But it is what it is, and that's certainly going to be a game to look out for.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be a big crowd anyway. I mean, you mentioned, you know, the kickoffs, and this weekend again we've got kickoffs at various times across the weekend with the World Cup, and I think the only certainty being that we can catch up with them all in the non-league paper on Sunday morning. What else can we expect to read in this weekend's edition?
Yeah, we've got plenty on. Obviously, we've got the FA Vars draw, which was made on Monday, as we've touched upon. So yeah, we're going to be sort of delving into that. We've got stuff from John Bostock, the former Tottenham prodigy. I think he was linked with Barcelona at one point, and as one of England's finest young talents. Didn't quite hit the heights that many thought he would do. He's now rolled up at Notts County. He's been training there, and what a great sign in that is. So yeah, we've been speaking to John, and we've got a nice piece on him, and I've got a nice piece I'm doing with Ross McNeely, the Aldershot manager, as we've already touched upon, and Plenty of stuff streaming. Go lower on the calendar. We're going to be looking at the Harlow Town situation. That's something else we'll be looking into. And Yeah, all the results, tables, fixtures from the Christmas period coming up, and plenty to buy the paper for.
Busy period.
I'll
get your digital edition, but there is still something magical about newsprint, particularly at Christmas. The smell of newspaper, I just think it sends you back, and it brings an extra smile to your face, as John Couch always does as well. Thanks for joining us once again on the Non-League Football Show, John.
Thank you.
Speak to you again very soon.
Thanks, Tim.
And that's it for this week. Thanks as ever to all of my guests. Good luck to everybody involved in matches this weekend. Let's hope we can beat the weather and get plenty of action going ahead this weekend. A big thank you to everybody for listening, of course. Don't forget to tell all your friends, share the pod, let people know that we are here, and we'd love some interaction from you as well. And you can, of course, follow us throughout the season, joining throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. So stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you, and goodbye.
Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.